We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back on the program once again Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. And several times a year, we try to have Rick here on the program, and we talk about cars and car care. And the idea is that you got a car and it's giving you trouble. Just call in here and tell us, well, what kind of car it is, and tell us the make, and tell us the model, and give us the best description that you can. And Rick will see if he can point you in the direction of a solution. And one of the things we also try to do is, say at a time like this, to talk a little bit about basic winter maintenance tips, things that you really ought to be thinking about this time of year to make sure that you're safe and the car continues to operate well. So we'll be doing that. And we're already getting some callers coming in here, so we'll get right to that as well. Let me give you the telephone number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. And that is 800-222-9455. So either of those, whichever works for you, you can call in and talk to Rick. Thanks very much.
Welcome. Glad to be here.
We have someone ready to go, so we'll start right in. And the first caller is in Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah.
Mine is more of a generic question, perhaps for the benefit of those who are considering buying a new car or a different used car and so forth. Years ago, there was a fellow here in town that had a repair shop, Sport Tune, you may remember. I was talking one day to the proprietor of the place, and he told me there were a couple of, at that time, this was in the early 70s, there were a couple of brands of vehicle that he just didn't see, which he surmised either very good or the dealer is keeping them, the owners of these things happy and so forth. So my question is, what sort of vehicles you as a mechanic and having a repair shop and so forth, do you find easy to work on, a pleasure to work on, well-designed, well-engineered, so on and so forth, versus the marquees that that they roll in the door and it's got this, and you go, oh, no, not one of those again, and cringe and think, oh, geez, I wish you'd take their business someplace else. So if it, as much as you can, if there are any particular brands or models of cars that you think are really, really good in various price ranges and types and so forth, and those that are not so good. Thank you.
Well, okay. Well, I want to do that. I think in the past, Rick's been maybe a little hesitant to endorse particular brands of cars. But I don't know, is there are there some things you can say about what cars are the most maintenance free, maybe, or have the fewest problems? Or?
Well, I say as a general rule, number one, any research that you do with regards to whether it be a new car or a used car, Consumer Reports is an excellent resource. It's very accurate. I can go down that list and see specific cars that, as the caller mentioned, are not so desirable that are on that list. And as a general rule, you're going to find Hondas and Toyotas near the top. And in terms of maintenance, it's just pretty much normal maintenance, normal scheduled maintenance. Cars get high mileage. I mean, we've got some that are, you know, over 200. We've got some that are approaching 300,000 miles. And, you know, those are primarily highway miles. Mm-hmm. And thoughts on highway miles is it's almost like you can divide it by two because the car gets up to temperature, it stays at temperature, and it's these short trips that are hard on things. Mm. Of course, cars that sit a lot.
Yeah.
So, but the best resource, as I mentioned, is Consumer Reports, and I would strongly encourage that if you're looking at a used car that you find someone that you're comfortable with to inspect the car, give you an idea of what it needs. And then you can factor that into the negotiation. Maybe it's at a certain mileage where it needs a service. And that information is good to have. It's better to find it out before you make the purchase than after.
Yeah. And if you're, say, you're looking to buy a used car and the owner can say to you, I can show you that the oil was always changed at the recommended intervals and and the service that's recommended by the manufacturer that we did that. And I can show it all to you. I got the receipts. Mm-hmm. I got a file. I got everything here. Will that make you feel better about that car?
Oh, definitely. As opposed to someone that says, well, I did all the services.
And take my word for it.
And usually when people say that, sometimes what it means is all they've done is oil changes. They've mm-hmm. never done anything else. In the glove box should be the maintenance schedule. And in that book, there should be documentations of each service where the dates and the mileage are written down and it's stamped by whatever firm did the servicing. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is get the vehicle identification number off the car. They call it the VIN number. It's on the driver's side at the base of the windshield. And you can call the dealer and give them that VIN number, and they'll be able to tell you what services have been done in the dealership environment. They won't be able to access independent repairs. Those you'll have to have, as you mentioned, receipts for. Mm-hmm. But, yes, if you've got receipts and documentation, that's a huge plus.
Yeah, and I'm sure you would say, as far as being an owner is concerned, that you're going to get more mileage out of your car if you do the maintenance that is recommended by the manufacturer, and you do it in pretty much on the schedule that they
yes.
lay out.
Right.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps. Let's go to the next caller up in Geneva, line 4 on the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I have an F-150 2005 Ford pickup. It's a 5.4 liter Triton, and I've had nothing but problems with it. So I'm not really looking too kindly on the Ford trucking business right now. I've owned Fords most of my life. And this is the first time I got to tell you, I think Ford is really, I don't know. I've put on 3 sets of brakes and 62,000 miles. I've just got through replacing the transmission because it went out. And the Ford guys don't seem to care. It's basically you're talking to yourself or talking to a brick wall. And I have taken it to a particular dealership. And for instance, I got 3 estimates on what it's going to take to repair the truck. And when I went to the Ford dealer, it doubled in price. And they were saying there was this, this, and this that needed to be replaced, so it was added on top of the other problem, the transmission itself, which was ridiculous. And I know these guys got to make a living, but I'm kind of anti dealership. I've got a couple guys I take my vehicles to now and take it to the dealership at all outside of just buying the car there, because I've had other vehicles in the past and they had no problems whatsoever with them. But then I find out later on, you know, how come is it $800 to $1,000 every time I go in to get something worked on? And it's just insane. Now, the gentleman who called earlier said, you know, quality as far as, you know, wanting to know which is easiest to work on. I don't think any of them. I'm an retired mechanic from years back, and I don't know. Hondas and Toyotas seem to be the best cars on the block. I don't see a lot of them being in the repair shop, and it seems like Ford, Chevys, Dodges, they all have these recall notices. I don't know. Is there something behind that, or can you give me any kind of recommendations what I should do with you know, the one I've got now? I'll get off and listen. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. He maybe he's just not happy with who's ever doing the servicing. If he's gotten 3 estimates, that kind of tells me that he's kind of trying to find somebody that he's comfortable with or he trusts. And maybe the best thing for him to do is talk to some of his friends, maybe do a little research on the internet as far as trying to remember that Click and Clack, they have a website
where
you can punch in your VIN, your zip code.
Mm-hmm.
And it will pull up reviews of different shops in that area or within 15 miles or 5 miles, whatever you choose. Maybe that's a good place for him to start. As far as what the dealer quote is twice, you know, without actually not without seeing the paperwork, I really can't comment on that. I know they do charge more typically per hour than independents, but it's not, I wouldn't call it a significant amount difference. I mean, it's not double.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, maybe that's the best we can do. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580 is Rick Karch. He's the owner of Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's a mechanic and has been here on the program many times before to do this kind of show, to try and do a little troubleshooting. And if you have a car problem, you can call us and tell us about it, and he'll do his best to suggest to what's the solution. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. And we'll talk next with someone in Mantino. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, Rick, I got a Toyota Corolla with 18,000 on it. And I got no problems. But the question I have is, in the maintenance brochure they have, retorque drive shaft bolts. Now, I hate to bring it to a dealer because they always find a dozen things wrong with it. How critical is that maintenance, retorque drive shaft bolt?
Well, it shouldn't be an issue. If the bolts were loose, you would hear like a clicking type noise on as you lightly accelerate or
like on the old universal joints?
Exactly. And if the bolts were loose, for example, you would hear a noise. So
it's not critical then?
No, it's not.
Because I know when I bring it in, they find four or five things.
Right. What year is the car?
Hmm?
What year is the car?
It's an 07.
07, okay.
No, I had a Camry, and I brought it to the dealer only for brakes. You know, I had 190,000. I maintained it myself, and I had no problem except for brakes and tires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like to stay away from a dealer.
Sure. Yeah, I understand.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Well, I don't know, again, if this is how easy a question to answer this would be, but, you know, say you have a car and you think that there's a particular problem or you want some particular service done, no matter who it is you're taking it to. So you take the car to that person and they look at it and they say, well, okay, I see your problem here. But I also think that here are some other things that I see that I think should be fixed. So how do you think about that? I mean, do you say to them, okay, is this a matter of safety? Is that what this is? Or is it something else? And are there some questions you can ask to try to get the idea of, okay, you think that should be repaired, but how important is it? Should I do it now? Can I do it in 6 months? Would it be a big deal if I didn't do this thing at all?
Well, maybe the best way for owners of vehicles to be a little more knowledgeable before they bring a car in is if they just take 5 or 10 minutes before they take the vehicle in, the evening before, and just look through the owner's manual and the maintenance manual and see what's spelled out in there.
Hmm.
And you can kind of go through your head and say, okay, yeah, I remember doing that. No, I didn't do that. So when you take it in and if they start making recommendations about things, at least you'll have a little more knowledge about what they're recommending, or maybe you can say, no, I did do that. And the other thing, too, to kind of answer your question, is typically what we try to do if we look at a vehicle and we find other things, which is part of a maintenance inspection, you're supposed to look the whole car over and provide recommendations. And we try to prioritize them. You know, sometimes a car will come in and they'll say, well, we've got an oil leak. And you get the car up in the air and you look at it and you see that, yeah, there is a leak, but to fix this leak, it's $350. Well, this one little drop on the ground, in my opinion, is not really worth $350 sometimes. Now, to some people it is. To some people, they don't care what it costs. But so you have to kind of be honest with them and explain to them, okay, now this is a safety issue. Now, if you're just driving in town, we can wait a little bit. But if you're going to be on the highway, this particular component needs to be replaced because it could lead to a safety problem.
Hmm.
So, yeah, if you just ask questions along those lines, if, you know, financially for a lot of people, they can't do everything at once, and that's fine. So it's just a matter of establishing priorities. And if you can ask them to do that, that will help you with your decision-making process. And, yeah, some things can wait, sure.
Okay, let's talk with somebody in Mahomet. Line two. Hello?
Mm-hmm. I have a Plymouth Grand Voyager 1994, and it's only got about under 130,000 on it. And I haven't done much to it since the 60,000-mile repair, and it just keeps chugging on. But I do have one problem that's specific. It, like, when I stop, when I leave home and the car is cold, even in the summer, I stop for a railroad, and then when I start, it lurches forward a little bit. It just startles me. It's not like it really goes out into the highway or anything, but, and it does it at stop signs. When I stop, then when I start to put the gas on gently, it just kind of, you know, jumps forward, and it, what could be wrong with it, you know?
Are you describing like a hesitation where you step on the gas and nothing happens?
Yeah, it does hesitate, but then it
takes off.
Grabs and, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of jumps forward a little bit, which is scary.
And we don't have a check engine light on?
No.
No check engine light. Well, typically when there's a hesitation, it's usually an indication that there's a lack of fuel. Fuel filter is a maintenance item. I don't know if it's ever been changed on this vehicle. The other thing that...
Oh, I'm pretty sure it has.
Okay, well, you might look through your records.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing to do if you haven't been doing is to use what's referred to as fuel injector cleaner. And you simply buy this at the parts store and you pour it into the gas tank.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Tektron is a good product.
Uh-huh.
And you should do that at least four times a year. The other thing, since it's only doing it when it's cold, when it gets to operating temperature, this problem goes away 100%?
It seems to.
Okay, but there's still a little of it?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know if I've made note mentally of that.
Okay. The other thing to look through your records is to see how old the spark plugs are.
Mm-hmm.
You should have had a service at 120,000.
Ooh, I don't think I did.
Okay, well, that might be a good place to start. When you make the appointment, mention to them what's happening when the vehicle's cold so that when you make the appointment, drop the vehicle off the night before so that when they get there first thing in the morning, it'll be cold like it is when you leave the house. And then they can drive the car and experience it.
Okay.
And that always helps a lot when we can actually see what it's doing or feel what it's doing.
That sounds great. Well, I'll just go ahead and listen. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Thank you. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign, line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, my wife took our 07 Nissan Versa to the dealer for just regular service and called when she got there to say that they'd recommended some extra and rather expensive work, partly on the brakes involving something called calipers, which I had never heard of. So I thought maybe I would look into that before I told them to go ahead and do it.
How many miles are on the car?
Just over about 17,500.
17,500, it needs calipers?
That's what they said. Well, I don't know about needing. It was a fairly expensive job adjusting them or something like that.
Well, there are no adjustments to a caliper. It's self-adjusting. Yeah, do you know what a caliper is?
No.
Okay. Caliper, we'll start out. The brake rotor, which is the round component that you see inside the wheel that's shiny, that's what the brake pads squeeze against.
Yeah.
When you step on the brake pedal. And what makes the brake pad squeeze against the rotor is the caliper. It has pistons in it. And when you step on the brake pedal, you create pressure in what they refer to as a master cylinder. The master cylinder, that pressurized fluid goes through lines and rubber hoses to that respective caliper, and then it applies that brake.
Uh-huh.
Usually with a caliper, it leaks. It may stick. But at 17,500 miles, I would kind of question that as being a likely source. Maybe they were referring to brake pads. Is this a in-town car only?
Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hasn't been very far away from home.
Right. Do you have the paperwork in front of you?
No, I don't. I'm in the car.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, not that car. The other car.
Okay. All right. Well, you might review it, and if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to talk to you. If you want to just call me, I can talk it over with you. But I would look at what they've actually written down because.
Well, I looked at the receipt when she brought it back, and I didn't see anything about that, you know, as a recommended repair. But I'll look at it again.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't put it away yet. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
And again, to Bloomington, line 4 for another caller here. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a little bit unusual problem. I have a 93 Ford Escort wagon, and you know, when I'm driving it, and you know, between I think the first and second gear, like I have to rev the car way up, you know, like maybe to 4,000 RPM to get it to switch a gear. And the thing of it is, this only happens like from April to October when it's warm. When the temperature gets over 55, 60, that's when I have to rev it way up to get it to switch from, I don't know if it's first to second or second to third, but it's like right now it isn't happening, but it happens, you know, when it's warm out. Why would it only happen when it's warm?
And when it doesn't shift, if you let up on the accelerator pedal a little bit and then squeeze it back down gently, will it shift?
No, it'll just kind of stay stuck in that gear, you know, it seems like the only thing that, you know, gets it to switch into the next gear is to, like, rev it way up, you know, to really hit the gas.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it switches, you know, and it usually happens like if I've driven the car and I let it sit for a little while when it's warm out or hot, and then when I go to drive it again, it'll go through that.
Well, I don't know why it would be only when it was warm. That particular problem sounds to me like it would occur when it was cold, like maybe an indication of low fluid. And as the fluid is heated, of course, the fluid expands, and then the fluid level goes up. Have you had any...
I've had someone look at it. I brought it in, and I explained the problem, and they do some adjustments on the idle and things, but it doesn't solve it. And I talked to other people about it, and they thought, you know, maybe it needs like some kind of throttle adjustment or something.
Well, depending on, I don't know what specific transmission is in the car, but as far as what they're referring to is there's a kickdown cable that can be adjusted. And then some of them use a vacuum modulator to control the shift points. So you might want to consult a transmission shop and have them take a look at it. Do you know how to check the fluid level?
I do, although it always seems to be... I do have a difficulty checking the fluid level.
Okay. Because depending on the color of the fluid, that's always a good indication, too. It should be a bright red. If it's black.
The color's always been good, and I've been, you know, pretty good about maintaining it.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for about, you know, 3-4 years now, and I kind of just put up with it. But do you think, is that a transmission thing then?
Well, the basic thing to look at first is the kickdown cable adjustment, and or if it's got the vacuum modulator. Make sure the diaphragm doesn't have a hole in it.
Okay, I'll write that down. Kickdown modulator.
And the kickdown cable, whichever one the vehicle has.
Right. And, I'll check in with my mechanic and have him, you know, look at that, see if that would make a difference there. And I'll go from there.
Okay. All right.
All right, well. Thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right. We're already at the midpoint here in this hour of Focus 580. Rick Karch is with us, owner of Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Occasionally here throughout the year, he's on the program. We talk about car care, give you a chance to call in, ask about problems that you may be having, or maybe you have general kind of maintenance questions. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Somebody else here in Mantino calling on line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a 2002 Buick LeSabre. Has about 100,000 miles on it. The car runs fine. I get good mileage for a car that size. And recently the check engine light has come on. And I've had it checked. with the by an auto parts store. They put the computer on it. I've had it checked three times, and the person there told me that it was a probably a mass airflow sensor. That's what the printout showed. You there?
Hey, I'm listening.
Okay. Okay, that's what it showed, and so how much is that? Well, we have rebuilt ones, and they're $150 with the trade-in, and the dealer is $300. And so after driving it a little while, well, he did tell me. He said there's a cleaner for that. So I took it off. I took it off and cleaned it, and the light would go out. Then I'd drive a little while and come back on. And this has been the story for quite a while. The car runs fine, get good mileage. The only thing I have, once in a while, it'll act like there's a hesitation. when you're driving or when you're accelerating, it'll kind of hesitate. And he told me that was kind of a backfire. And that's another indication of that sensor's not well. Well, I've driven the car for probably 1,500 miles with it doing this. It goes on and comes off and goes on and comes off and doesn't follow any pattern. And I was just, before I invest in this airflow sensor, I wonder if you have any idea about what that could be.
So there's only one code.
On the printout, it says that it could be a vacuum hose that's off, and I suspect I think it reads that it could cause a mechanical timing condition, or the throttle body intake tube was loose or off or cracked. I've checked all those hoses that I can see and everything, and I don't find anything wrong there.
Okay, so the code specifically says mass airflow sensor. It doesn't say bank
printout.
It doesn't say system too lean?
No.
Okay. Then you do need that part. The hesitation is a good indication of that sensor having a problem.
Okay.
That's probably the most influential sensor on your car in terms of fuel delivery.
It is.
Yes. And I suspect if you replace it, your mileage would go up a little bit.
Well, I don't know how it could get any higher. It's between 23 and 25 miles a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
On a Buick LeSabre.
Right. That's
the other thing that it mentions is the manifold absolute pressure. Is that the same part?
Well, typically they'll have one or the other.
Uh-huh.
And the mass airflow sensor is the one right near the air cleaner.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So you would say to go ahead and get that part.
Correct.
Okay. Do you think I could buy it from the parts store, which is about half price?
Sure.
Would
yeah,
it be okay?
They'll have a warranty with it. Just make sure you get documentation on the warranty. Typically on those components, 12 months, 12,000 miles.
Yeah. Well, I just can't figure out why it would get such good mileage with it. I took two trips with it, and it would go off and on and mm-hmm. off and on. And
well, sometimes it may be working correctly, which obviously it is at times.
Uh-huh.
And there are times that it's not, and the computer picks up on that.
Yeah.
Which is probably when the hesitation occurs.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not, it doesn't follow a pattern. The hesitation doesn't follow a pattern.
Right.
As far as just driving or from a stop sign or something. So, okay, thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Okay, very good.
I'll follow your advice.
Okay, well,
thank you
for the call. We'll continue. We have some other callers. And next talk with somebody in Belgium. Line two. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Inge enjoys driving Volkswagens. I think I've heard him talk about it more than once.
Uh-huh.
And Volkswagens have a small diesel that come in them. And talking about gas mileage and stuff, I've always thought that diesels would be pretty good. Now, is Mr. Inge's choice a good choice for a small diesel?
Yeah, I don't. Volkswagen's been making diesels a long time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's kind of interesting, getting back to the beginning of the show, the first caller referring to good cars and bad cars, and I mentioned using Consumer Reports. And one other thing I should mention is with regards to Consumer Reports is that certain years of cars are troublesome or very good. And Consumer Reports is excellent about that. So there may be certain years of the diesel that may not be as good, may have areas of specific areas that they have problems with. But to answer your question, yes, that's a good choice.
That's a good choice. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll have to go look.
Yes.
I know you're not supposed to tout any particular individual, but is there a dealership for Volkswagens in Champaign-Urbana?
Yes, O'Brien's in Urbana.
O'Brien's, okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. We have from time to time talked with people from Consumer Reports, and the subject of diesel engines has come up and why it is that we've talked about this question. Well, why it is that diesels have never, for passenger cars, seem never really to have caught on in the United States. And so we've had some conversation about that. And somebody actually on a recent show called in and said, well, maybe one reason is that diesels, they're not real happy in the wintertime. If it's cold, it can be a problem, and I just kind of wondered about that. Is that, you know, here we can have some pretty cold temperatures. Is that a reason not to want to have a diesel?
No. When I had a diesel 25 years ago, it was an issue. You had to be careful where you bought the fuel. Back then, they had, I forget how it was. There was a blend one and a blend two. I can't remember how it was, but basically what would happen in the winter is the diesel fuel would gel.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't flow. Yeah. And it could happen going down the highway. It would just gradually start losing power. I think some of the problems with diesels is, number one, they smell. Number two, the diesel fuel, whenever you put diesel fuel in a diesel, you always get that odor on your hands. And I think just those things, and of course it lacks power as a general rule, unless it's too turbocharged. And they're noisy.
Yeah.
So I think those things may have hurt a little bit.
Yeah. You think today's diesels are better?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Right. Some of them you can't even tell they're a diesel. They're so quiet. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think a diesel is a good choice. You just have to do the research if you're, you know, particularly in trucks, they seem to be very popular.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go back to the phones here. Champaign County, next, line 3. Hello?
Hi. Mm-hmm. Nobody's making a turbo diesel hybrid yet, which is what I want, which would help with the noise problem because you wouldn't be running it through RPM changes. You'd be running it generally at the same speed, which would eliminate a lot of its objections. But I have a new Beetle, and I took it for one of these 30-point checkups at the dealership, and I was surprised that they didn't suggest that I should have my transaxle and my automatic transmission fluid changed. I've never had an automatic before, and I don't know really if that's another thing that is sort of don't do anything unless, you know, there's a problem, or whether, I mean, it is a 60K scheduled maintenance, but I'm surprised they didn't suggest it. They did point out that my, similar to McPherson strut, suspension system on the front wheel, the bushing is riding up. Now, Chilton's has a diagram of how to tighten it down, but there doesn't seem to be any deterioration of the rubber. I just wonder whether there's, and it doesn't have any symptoms. It damps quite well. It rides well. I just don't think that it's really a big deal. So I have a couple of odd questions in that. One of them is the dog that barked, and the other is that I don't know whether it really needs to be dealt with. And the other one is, how essential would it be to have those fluids changed? It is an around-town vehicle mainly.
Right. Well, a lot of those fluids are synthetic now. And some of them are, they do let them go to 100,000. Hmm. And as far as the strut is concerned, are you making reference to the boot that goes around the piston of the strut? When you say right?
No, this is just where it fastens to the frame at the top, kind of, and it kind of there's just a bigger gap up there. The only thing I can surmise is the problem with it would be that it would allow for debris to kind of fall in there and mm-hmm. maybe contribute to its deterioration because, I mean, it doesn't, it's just there's a bigger gap than should be, according to some pictures I've seen.
I see.
It just has loosened up a bit, and you have to use like two wrenches to tighten it down to keep the whatever the shock pellet is in place without adjusting the, I don't know. It seems an odd non-problem, and I just, they did recommend it being done, and I think it doesn't really seem like any of the rubber's deteriorated, so I don't think it really needs to be replaced. But
generally, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're talking about the upper strut mount.
Right. There's a bushing.
And then there's
rubber bushing of sorts.
A nut in the center with a looks like a bolt coming out.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's the upper strut mount. Generally, when those need to be replaced, they make noise, whether it be on bumps or in turns.
No problem. No damping problem. I mean, it's fine. It's just that the gap is wider up than it apparently is supposed to be.
Well, if you aren't having any issues, I wouldn't worry about it right now.
Yeah. That's what I thought, but I wanted to be reassured.
Yes.
And you just say that some of these synthetic compounds that they use for lubrication now are just sort of, and actually, I guess the transmission, it's more of a, it's not so much a lubricant as a traction or something, I guess you could call it that.
Yeah, you can look through your owner's manual under the maintenance schedule.
Well, I know it's already up for maintenance. I'm letting it go a little bit longer, but. But they didn't even, the checkup at the dealer didn't even mention it.
Well, that's why I'm mentioning that you might find as you look through the maintenance schedule, you'll see it at around 100,000 or it may be at 120 or it may be, some of the BMWs are lifetime.
Yeah.
So they're.
Well, this isn't at 60K. It recommends a change of the both the transmission and the transaxle.
Okay, it is specified at 60, then it should be done.
Yeah, right. Thanks.
All right,
you're welcome.
So on some BMWs, you don't change the transmission fluid for the life of a car?
Correct.
Really?
They call it lifetime.
Really? And it's that, the fluid itself, it won't ever break down?
Oh, it does. And it should be serviced.
Huh.
Yeah. There's only a few models that are like that. And most of them have transmission service listed at 100,000. But transmission is something that a lot of people take for granted and don't really think about.
Uh-huh.
But it is a maintenance item. It has fluid, and some do have filters. Particularly people that own the automatic transmissions in like your like the Honda Pilot, the Odyssey, those. You want to definitely keep up on transmission service on those because those transmissions are kind of notorious for having issues. There's been recall on them for internal lubrication and cooling. Mm-hmm. So if you have one of those vehicles, you definitely want to keep up with the transmission service. It's a lot cheaper to change the fluid than it is to change the transmission.
Yeah, I'm sure. About 10 minutes left. Rick Karch is with us from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. If you have car trouble, call us. We can talk about it. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana is up next. Line 1. Hello.
Hi. I tuned in maybe 10, 15 minutes ago, and I couldn't listen for long, and then I thought I'd call and listen on the phone while you answered the question. The first one was about diesels. Maybe you already answered it. If you don't have a diesel car now, and it seems like whenever I've been at the gas station, diesel costs more than regular premium gas, and you know, when it's cold out, you may have more of a problem starting the car. What are the advantages to buying a diesel if you don't already own a diesel?
Well, you're right. And I never understood that because the way I understand the refinery process, diesel fuel comes out of the refinery before gasoline, so it's costs less to produce. As far as the diesel is concerned, I think it's just a case of if you're comfortable with the noise and the odor of the fuel when you're refueling, I don't think there's anything wrong with the diesel. The new products, as far as cold weather and fuel is blended for diesels year-round, so gelling should not be an issue anymore, as long as you're buying it from a reputable gas station. Were there other questions that you had about diesels, or is this something you're considering?
Maybe I didn't ask it right or word it right. If you don't have a diesel car now and you want to buy one, it seems like you'll be paying more for fuel. Is it that what's an advantage or two to buying a diesel car over a gas engine car? Is it that they require less service, or I read a long time ago that diesels were popular maybe in warmer places over in the Eastern Hemisphere because diesel fuel was a lot cheaper than gas.
Right. But it's not in Illinois. But as far as maintenance, yes, it is cheaper. I mean, there's no spark plugs. You have a fuel filter you should change once a year, and, of course, the air filter. And other than that, they're pretty much maintenance-free.
And another question, but not about diesel, is additives, things that will say PTFE or Teflon, are any of them worthwhile experimenting with, or is it better to research it and, you only have a moment or two to answer that?
Well, my thoughts on those additives are that if they do what they claim they will do, that the dealers would install them, or the manufacturer would install that product when they produce the car, because it would cut down on their warranty claims. Probably the number one thing you can do is in terms of oil, oil services as recommended, or maybe even step them up a little bit. Some of these manufacturers are allowing oil intervals to go up to 15,000 miles, even though it is a synthetic, but that's just, I think, way too long. Switching to a synthetic oil is an excellent way to extend the life of any engine.
Okay, unless you have like a $400 banger type car, it's better to use synthetic probably.
Well, synthetic is going to add the life to pretty much any vehicle that you put it in. So it is more expensive, but it's definitely worth the expense.
That's all I have. You've been really informative.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And isn't it true, though, that historically, maybe we have to go back some years, that actually, though, diesel fuel was cheaper?
Yes.
I guess I'm kind of more in that sort of older mind frame, that was why people were interested in diesel, because the fuel was cheaper. And I think it was also had been very popular for – much more popular in Europe. And I think that was also – wasn't that also for the same reason, because the diesel fuel was cheaper?
Cheaper in the beginning, it was.
In the beginning, yeah. Now, maybe not – maybe that's not true.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's more.
Yeah.
I really don't understand it. And I think that's why when you read articles, all the truck drivers, they'll fill up on one side of the border and drive through Illinois because it's more.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's see. Greenup. We'll go there. Line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a question about a 94 Grand Caravan with a 3.3-liter engine. I had some symptoms that were kind of unusual. It would run fine except when the weather changed. Sometimes when the temperature changed, it would not run. Couldn't start it. And I had it taken to a garage and was diagnosed to have a crankshaft sensor problem. And I was wondering, is that very hard to install? Is that something I could do myself, or is it a little bit tricky? And are there any other symptoms of that particular problem?
When you say no start, you mean the engine cranks over. It's not a battery problem, correct?
Right. Yeah, it would crank over fine. When I got that, someone had tampered with, had worked with some, like a governor control screw, and I replaced that whole part that had this. It was supposed to be sealed. I forgot the name of it, but it's not a governor anymore, but it used to be. And so after that, it ran fine for a while, and then apparently the crank sensor went bad, according to this diagnosis. But before I had changed that, I could adjust that screw and make it run. And even like during the afternoon, if it went from 70 degrees to 90 degrees, that would change how it ran, which I thought was strange. But does that sound like a crankshaft sensor problem?
Well, crankshaft sensor provides input to the computer, generally a sine wave, it may be a square wave, to let the computer know that the engine is turning over. In other words, it provides that information, and then the computer determines, okay, then we can provide spark, and then we can provide fuel. Do you have a check engine light on at any time?
I don't think it's come on with this particular issue.
Well, generally, if there's a problem with the crank sensor, the light would be on. Or if the light is off, it would be in history.
I think it might have been on at one point in time, and then it probably has been started and stopped enough that it's not on.
Okay. Does this vehicle have a tachometer?
Yes, it does.
Okay. The next time it won't start, watch the tach. The tach needle should dance just a little bit, like maybe 150, 200 RPM dance. And as long as that's dancing, that tells me that your crank sensor is probably okay.
Oh.
Does this have a lot of miles on it?
Yeah, about 180,000.
Okay. So if you're cranking it and you see that the tachometer needle is dancing, then what you need to do is get somebody to help you. While one of you operates the starter motor, let me back up for a minute. Does it make any difference if you put the accelerator to the floor?
Sometimes it does.
And it does how? What happens?
It appears to. I'm not sure if it's really consistent, but if I pop it and put it to the floor, sometimes I can get it started.
Okay.
That's quite a bit of grinding. Other times it starts great.
Right.
Okay. No problem.
Well, what I'm thinking is that you've got a fuel pump that's not starting.
I can hear the fuel pump run, and we did tests on that, and it has high pressure. It has the right pressure for the fuel pump.
So you can hear the fuel pump run even when...
Yeah, and we've tested. We hooked it up to a test gauge for the fuel pump, and it has the perfect pressure, and it shoots out gas. We don't think that's an issue. We checked that pretty thoroughly.
I understand, but when it doesn't start, do you hear the fuel pump?
I don't know, because I've never, tried it immediately after that.
Okay.
But I do hear it. I do hear it, but I haven't done a test on it immediately after that. I hear the fuel pump always. I mean, always, as soon as you turn the key, you hear it.
Even when it won't start?
Right.
Okay. Then you may be back to an ignition problem. So then I would watch the tach, and if that's the case, then the tach will not be moving.
Uh-huh.
Then it would be spark related.
Okay, and it could be crank sensor.
It can be. You can monitor those. And sometimes tapping on them, maybe the next time it doesn't start and the tachometer doesn't move, if you open the hood and get a long screwdriver and tap on that crankshaft position sensor and see if that gets it started.
And they're not too expensive. I mean, would it just be good maintenance to replace it, do you think?
Well, I always have a problem with throwing parts at a car unless I really know that's going to fix it or it's going to get me in some sense of direction. Because when you start throwing, let's say you throw three parts at a car and it fixes it. Well, what fixed it? I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't like to do things that way.
Right.
I'm more comfortable knowing, okay, this is what's really wrong. And sometimes it takes time.
Are those computer diagnostic tools pretty accurate? Because that's
yes.
What it said. I mean,
yes.
So if that's
what it said, that's probably what it needs.
And as far as putting it on myself, one person told me you have to be careful. It's a magnetic device, I understand. You don't want to touch metal to it. Is that correct when you put it in? Does it matter?
You're not going to hurt it.
Won't hurt it? But it's not a real sensitive issue.
No, I mean, if you drop it, yes. But, no, if it comes in contact with something ferrous, it's not going to hurt it, no.
So that's something I could probably do myself and not...
I would just, do a little bit of reading about what it takes and see if you're comfortable with it.
It has to be gauged just right, doesn't it?
Yeah, it usually comes with a little, looks like a little brown tab, like kind of like a self-adhesive that's on there that creates the gap for you automatically.
Oh.
And then over time that piece will fall off. But that's what it's there for, so you don't want to remove that.
Okay. All right, that's good to know. And another question back to the synthetic oil. Is semi-synthetic oil also better than the old regular oil?
Yes.
you'd recommend that on all engines, even antique cars? And
well, I'm a big believer in synthetic oil.
Can't go wrong with it. But
well, I've seen it save a lot of engines, and we've had some customers that have had engine noises, and we've switched it to synthetic oil, and they drove the car for 2 years. So
I noticed that the semi-synthetic is not as expensive.
No, it's not. That's right.
But just to have that amount of it in there, that amount of synthetic oil in the mix, like, can help quite a bit enough to make it worthwhile, apparently.
Yes.
And the best would be to get the pure synthetic, I suppose.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. Well, we're going to have to stop. I'm really sorry. My apologies. We have a couple callers that we cannot take, but we're simply at the end. We're going to have to leave it there, maybe with a promise that a couple of months down the road, Rick will come back and he can talk with us some more. Any last sort of thing in, just in terms of regular maintenance, particularly for winter, you might want to mention?
Tires, I think, are often overlooked. Tire rotation, you don't have to rotate tires every 5,000 miles. It's a matter you measure the tire, and if there's less tread on the front, then you rotate tires. But tires is really important. Take a look at them. If you aren't sure what to look at, just ask your local repair facility, and they'll be more than happy to help you and make any decision there, because it's kind of a safety issue.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
And I think normal maintenance we pretty well hit upon today. So I think that should do it.
And make sure there's washer fluid.
Washer fluid, yes.
In your car.
Correct.
All right. Hey, thanks very much for
being
here. Thank you. Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign.